How Civilizations Commit Suicide. So for the Reformation Society tonight, we're wanting to consider the problem that we have. We see civilizations committing suicide. How does it happen? If anyone doubts that London could become Londinistan, just consider the fact they've got a Muslim mayor, 460 mosques in London, while over 500 churches in London have been closed due to non-attendance. 85 Sharia councils or courts in England, Wales, and concentrated mostly in London, though. There's a book, a very successful best-selling book that has been published multiple times, Londinistan, How Britain is Creating a Terror State Within, and then How Britain Created a Terror State Within, and then How Britain Has Created a Terror State Within. So it's as from is creating, created, has created. Multiple releases of this book, Londinistan. In fact, you'd have trouble believing this is London. And here's British police putting up with this kind of absolute nonsense going on here. We're all Hezbollah. And British police being treated like this by these thugs. What are they doing in the country? And by the way, this is where Brexit actually got started. Because was it back in 2014, the Queen made a speech where she said, I'm going to instruct my government to expel from the country all foreigners who commit crimes. And immediately along came the EU saying, you can't do that. You remember the EU, that's against the laws of Brussels. And that's where the whole Brexit vision grew from, because you mean we can't expel foreign criminals from our own soil? Demographics are destiny. If you doubt that Europe could become Eurabia, I didn't design this. This is out there. I mean, the people call it Eurabia. Arabia is going to take over Europe and turn it into Eurabia. Again, this is something that's out there. Somebody else created. Welcome to Eurabia, where they are considering the Islamization of Europe. No less a publication as The Economist published this cover, Eurabia, the Myth and Reality of Islam in Europe, with a crescent moon top of the Eiffel Tower, for goodness sakes. If you doubt that America could become Ameristan, well, unfortunately, there are people who talk about that too, and even making designs like this. And in Dearborn, which is near Detroit, where they make most of America's cars, you've got no democracy, we want just Islam. Well, true enough, I'm sure Islam's got nothing to do with democracy. Consider what multiculturalism and mass Muslim immigration has done to Egypt and what we today call Turkey. How do civilizations commit suicide? Well, to understand what's at stake here, you need to consider the fate of the Byzantine Empire. The Byzantine Empire was the Eastern Roman Empire, also thought of as Greek, because Greek was the main language. You had the Latin Empire of Rome to the west, and you had the Greek Empire of Rome to the east, and Emperor Constantine divided into two. Well, when the Western Empire fell to the Vandals and the Goths and all of that, then the Byzantine Empire, the Eastern Empire, actually regained control of Italy very shortly thereafter, and a lot of North Africa that had been lost. And there was a time when Byzantine was the greatest empire in the world. In fact, it stood for 1,000 years. 1,000 years. And for 800 years, 8 centuries, there was no inflation. They had a gold-backed currency, and a loaf of bread cost the same 800 years later. Isn't that extraordinary? Byzantine was the greatest empire in the world. And here you can see St. Sophie, the greatest church in the world at that time, in the greatest city in the world at that time. Constantinople. For 1,000 years, Byzantine was the greatest economic, military, and political superpower in the world. And you just have to consider the magnificence of Constantinople, a phenomenal city, magnificent army, and at the center, San Sophie, the greatest church. Now, you know, someone like President Barack Hussein Obama walked in the San Sophie praising the advanced Islamic architecture. Now, this church was built in the 4th and 5th century, long before Muhammad was even born, Babur's grandparents are born, it was a Christian construction. And the Muslims took it and slaughtered Christians in it. And to think that the journalists could publish this without making a comment on either the stupidity or the duplicity of the American president in praising Islamic architecture in what was obviously a Christian construction. Then came the extermination of Christianity in Turkey. On the 29th of May, 1453, the greatest city in the world, Constantinople, fell to the Muslim Turks. The last emperor of the Byzantine Empire, Emperor Constantine the 12th, led out his few knights, which was a very miniature army, fighting against colossal amounts of Muslims. He charged into the masses of the Muslims and was never seen again. Emperor Constantine the 12th. This monument is not in Turkey, it is in Greece, because the Greeks still regard it as part of their extended empire. The Turkish invaders put the entire city to the sword. They slaughtered the entire population of the greatest city in the world at that time, Constantinople, slaughtering tens of thousands of civilians, including 12,000 people, Christians, mostly old people and women and children, in the greatest Christian church in the world at that time, the Hagia Sophia, which was a magnificent construction, phenomenal. It was built for 9,000 people, and there were 12,000 crowded in it on the day of the fall of Constantinople. And the Muslims later built minarets on the side to try and transform it something Islamic, but of course it's Eastern Orthodox. Look at this painting, which was done by the Muslims to commemorate the victory of Mehmet the Magnificent. Here he is lifting up his green Islamic flag with a crescent moon on his horse, but what's under his feet? Now remember, this is not a photograph, it's a painting, and they commissioned the painting. Is he over a Christian knight? They could have depicted Emperor Constantine the 12th, for that matter, under the hooves. No, it's a Christian princess, a blonde Christian woman with a crown, gold crown on her head, in a white dress. Just showing the contempt for women and for non-combatants in Islam, they depicted in their own fictitious painting to depict this victory, their Muslim leader standing over the dead body of a civilian, a woman, a Christian princess at that. That's the mentality. Today, Constantinople is called Istanbul. And what was once a vibrant Christian civilization for over a millennium, is today called Turkey. Christians are a small, persecuted minority in Turkey. In fact, according to Operation World, the Turks are the largest unreached peoples group in the world. And I won't go into the horrendous persecution of Christians just in the beginning of the 20th century. The term genocide was coined for what the Turks did to the Armenian Christians, 1.7 million of them. And that's not counting the hundreds of thousands of Greek and Assyrian Christians, 3.5 million Christians killed by the Turks between 1909 and 1922, culminating in the massacre of 300,000 Christians in the largest Christian city in Asia, the last Christian city in Asia, Smyrna, which is one of the churches, one of the towns of the seven letters to church in Revelation, where John and Polycarp ministered. And so that's it, but we've looked at that on other nights. Then consider the fate of Egypt. For many centuries, Egypt was the greatest economic and military superpower in the world. However, in the 7th century, Egypt was conquered and colonized by Muslim Arabs. In fact, the conquest of Egypt is quite embarrassing because it was under the Byzantine Empire. They had strong walled cities such as Alexandria. They had capable armies. They had a phenomenal navy. They had control of the sea. And they weren't actually beaten in battle. They were betrayed. Someone opened the gate of Alexandria so that they could come in and slaughter the population. Well, shortly after that, the Greeks or the Byzantines came by sea and retook the city. And they were in a phenomenally strong position. Alexandrian walls were high and tall and thick, and they had access to the sea. They could be resupplied indefinitely. They had control of the sea. And then, again, treachery. A Byzantine commander, for whatever reason, betrayed the whole thing, surrendered his intact army to a small Arab force. And there were, and this happened again, another occasion there was betrayal after the Greeks took it again. So there was no reason for Egypt to fall to the Muslims, and yet there was treachery. And so Egypt was conquered and colonized by the Muslim Arabs, but still, for 1,000 years, Christianity was the majority religion in Egypt. But today, the Egyptian Copts make up barely 10% of the population. Coptic is Egyptian. The Coptic language is the Egyptian language. The Coptic church is the Egyptian church. The Copts are Egyptians. The Arabs are the colonial invaders. And yet now the colonial invaders, the Arabs, outnumber the indigenous population of the Copts, who historically were the Egyptians. And today, the Copts are a minority in their own country. Christianity is under siege in what used to be, for a millennium, a Christian-majority country. For over 1,000 years, Egypt was Christian. Even after the Muslim conquest in AD 640, it took them centuries to whittle the Christians down by attrition until they were under the halfway mark. The Arabs have oppressed the Christian Copts for centuries. So, incredibly, the Egyptian church has survived 14 centuries of Islamic discrimination persecution. I was speaking on a radio program in America and California on the Copts and what they were suffering as a result of Barack Hussein Obama's Arab Spring, which had overthrown Mubarak's government, which was protecting them with 24 hours a day. Every church had military protection for the more than 20 years that he was president, and how Christians were being slaughtered and the churches were being destroyed. In one weekend, 74 churches were destroyed, and some churches had stood for over 1,000 years. And I had Americans phoning up saying, who cares if there were original copies and ancient manuscripts of the Bible? We've got the KJV. We don't need those manuscripts. And, you know, priceless art. And somebody phoned up. I had one idiot phoning up saying, well, they're not Christians anyway. I said, no, but they are. No, they're not real Christians. I said, excuse me. These people and the ancestors have for 14 centuries suffered persecution for their faith. I'll question your salvation before I question the salvation of people willing to suffer and die for Christ in Egypt. And, you know, click, person obviously hung up the phone, felt insulted. But the audacity of these Californians who somehow think that their comfortable Christianity is superior to that of people. Look, I'm not Coptic. I don't go for icons. We don't go for their style of worship. But I can't question that they're brothers in Christ when they suffer for Christ. That's about 10 million Christians, mostly Coptic Orthodox, but there's quite a lot of evangelicals too, making up 10% of the population of Egypt. And in fact, we've had John, one of our missionaries, up there speaking in evangelical churches where they are very dynamic in Egypt. Christians get beaten in the streets. In fact, it's known, the Egyptian Christians say to me, during Ramadan, the Muslims are all in a bad mood because they're not allowed to eat during the daylight hours. And so if you come to, you wouldn't dare go to school with a school lunch during Ramadan, because even though you're Christian, you're not Muslim, and there's nothing stopping you eating your lunch. If you've got food, they'll beat you up just because you bring food to school. You know, so, you know, if this is meant to be a spiritual exercise to make you closer to God or something, it doesn't work. Under Mubarak, the Egyptian army protected the churches 24 hours a day, every day of the year, for decades. And then along came this Hillary Clinton, Secretary of State, who said the Muslim Brotherhood is a force for peace and moderation in the Middle East, which has got to be one of the biggest lies ever. After all, the Muslim Brotherhood assassinated Anwar Sadat, the president, because he signed a peace treaty with Israel. They assassinate their own president. You can actually Google it and see. He's sitting there watching a march past his army, and they climb off in front of the presidential dais in the stadium and start to machine gun the president and his whole entourage there. 1981. Horrific. You know, Nobel Peace Prize winning president murdered for making a peace treaty. And Mubarak took over and banned the Muslim Brotherhood, crushed the Muslim Brotherhood, and protected the churches from Muslim Brotherhood terrorism. And now, along comes America in 2011, totally destroys the stability of what they said was one of the most important allies and stabilizing forces in the Middle East, and turned Egypt and the Muslim Brotherhood mess again. After the removal of Hosni Mubarak from power in the 2011 Arab Spring, Christian winter, the Muslim Brotherhood dominated the political landscape, and their party targeted Christians. Violence against Christians rapidly escalated sharply after 2011. Churches were targeted for car bombings, like here in Alexandria. This is a midnight mass. Murdering, bombing. Can you imagine outside churches, targeting churches? These are churches burning, being bombed, targeted, all because of the cursed American State Department's meddling in the affairs of countries like Libya, Egypt, and Syria, causing wars all over the place in countries that had been stable. And these are Christians being targeted for their faith, Copts. These are the original, these are the real Egyptians. The Arabs aren't real Egyptians historically. Remember, Hebrews were Hebrews. Even after 400 years in Egypt, they didn't become Egyptians. They were still Hebrews. And in fact, Joseph wanted his body, his bones to be brought back to be buried in his own land. So this idea that Arabs invade Egypt and then suddenly they're Egyptians. No, they're not. They're still the invaders, actually. Egyptians are Copts. And Egypt was a Christian country before there was an Islam. So looking at these pictures, it's deeply disturbing. And one of the most disturbing aspects of Islam in Egypt today is the kidnapping of children and forcing them to convert to Islam. Coptic children are forced to leave their families and convert to Islam because the law, Sharia law, says Muslims are better than Christians. Here's one of the oldest churches in Cairo, St. Mary's Church, being burned while lots of people stand filming it. It's just absolutely mind-boggling, the destruction caused by Islamic jihadists and the callousness. And while the church was burning, in fact, the fire brigade had trouble getting there because Muslim mobs blocking the road to prevent them getting there. And frequently, when there's been car bombs, Muslim mobs would block the streets, preventing ambulances getting to the Christians who have been blown apart in their churches. And many were screaming Allah Akbar and shouting with joy at the burning of their neighbor's church. This is not uncommon. Burial service of martyrs, Christians murdered for their faith in Egypt. So just bear in mind, this is a country where Egypt was the superpower of its time for centuries, millenniums. Egypt was the greatest power in the world, politically, economically, and for a time even spiritually. Homes and places of worship were torched, and the fire brigade in one place arrived 90 minutes late. I mean, how's that possible? When I was in the fire brigade, we were meant to get anywhere in 6 minutes, anywhere within our precinct. There are more than 300 mosques in this village of 20,000 people, only one church, and that church gets burned down, and the fire brigade arrives too late to do anything but stamp out the embers. The Syrian news agency reported no Christians were allowed to vote in the area when they had the elections that flowed out of the Arab Spring revolt 2012. The Copts were forcibly prevented from voting, even though there were 50% inhabitants in that village. Only Muslim Brotherhood candidates were elected because Christians were prevented from even entering the polling stations. This is the way it is in the Muslim Middle East. In Batim, Kaliber province, a mob of Muslim Brotherhood radicals stormed into church, informed them they no longer had any license, they need to vacate the building, which would be turned to mosque. Just arbitrary law. This is what happened under the Muslim Brotherhood, who had full support from the US government of Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton's State Department. An Egyptian policeman opened fire on a crowded train targeting Christian passengers as he shouted Allah Akbar. But then they said, no, there was no religious motivation. Yeah. Hundreds of thousands of Christian families have emigrated from Egypt in fear of violence from Islamic extremists. Now, bear in mind, Egypt had the largest amount of Christians in the whole of the Middle East, the largest number and largest percentage in all the Middle East. And so the undermining of Egypt is very, very, very destabilizing to the whole area. Shockingly so. And our Christian brethren have been under fire. Of course, they've been under pressure for 14 centuries. But the persecution in the last 7 years, since 2011, has been so severe that families that stood firm for centuries and millenniums have said this is too much and have emigrated to other parts of the country, other parts of the world. This is just beyond shocking. You cannot undo that damage. Even if we sent 1 million missionaries into Egypt, it couldn't undo the damage of losing millions of indigenous Christians whose roots went into that country for centuries and millenniums. And this, you could say same for Iraq, where Iraq had 1.3 million Christians there under Saddam Hussein with no persecution, real religious freedom. In fact, because Saddam Hussein didn't trust the Muslims, clever man, he only had Christian bodyguards and only Christian cooks in the kitchen and caterers. And well, he knew Christians don't assassinate people. So it was in his interest to cater for them. And so Saddam Hussein actually donated to the Baptist Church in downtown Baghdad, beautiful organ. You can go and see. There's this gift from His Excellency the President Saddam Hussein. Now, Saddam Hussein was doubtless a bad man, but what's replaced him has been vastly worse, to the extent that it makes Saddam Hussein look like golden era in comparison. They went from 1.3 million Christians in Iraq to less than 100,000 now. Thanks, America, for liberating us. How do you replace 1.2 million Christians in a country? It doesn't matter how many missionaries we send there. We've still got to learn the language, the culture, get these people already established there. The destruction of the church in its heartland, where it was born in the Middle East, is destructive, hideous. And of course, it's not like these jihadists love America, they hate them. You know, America's the big Satan, Israel's a small Satan. You know, those are the enemies of Islam. But the Christians in Egypt who stay are devout, they are dedicated. This is in St. Mark's in Cairo. And here again, you can see coffins being carried out of church funerals. These are coffins of martyrs, people who've been targeted for their faith. Here, these people being hit with rocks. This was part of the siege of St. Mark's. This happened under the Muslim Brotherhood presidency. This horrible character who was later ousted by the military. But this is the siege of the Church of St. Mark's in Cairo. And the Christians doing everything they could to defend their cathedral from being destroyed. They were under fire. Just look at all the rocks on the ground. And the chaos on the street. Just think of the destruction of what's been going on there with all the stones that were thrown at them and Christians trying to protect and here throwing back rocks back out that had been thrown in at them and church under siege trying to salvage some of the icons. Look at the size of that piece of concrete in this man's hand and look at the smashed windows, burning cars. Here's an example. You shouldn't play with petrol bombs if you don't want to get burnt. Obviously, people sometimes spill a bit of the fuel on themselves and no sympathy from us. These people are carrying tear gas canisters being shot at them to throw probably back at the police. And chaos. This went on day and night. And all the burning vehicles in the streets. These are people's vehicles. You can just only imagine what was going on. And this was chaos that they hadn't experienced for 26 years because Hosni Mubarak had been protecting them. And now because America wanted to kick out their friend and ally, who was a stabilizing force in Egypt, and put in a Muslim radical group like the Muslim Brotherhood, persecution and bloodshed and terror was heaped upon the Christians in the Middle East. Every time America bombs anyone in the Middle East, Christians get it in the neck. Because, yeah, terrorists are cowards. What can they do about that cruise missile or this bomber that came in? So they go and they find some poor Orthodox priest or Christian and behead him. Because they're easy targets. And, of course, they had nothing to do with it. But, you know, well, America's a Christian country and you're Christian. So, you know, if NATO bombed us or Americans bombed us, then they always take it out in the local Christians. It isn't too much to call it genocide, wiping out people from their own homeland. Here's St. Mark's Cathedral being targeted. That was the old church, it's the new church. And you can just see the missiles going through the air and the burning, the destruction. This is an ancient church which, as you can see, stood for centuries. And now the people are praying in the wreckage. I was sent this postcard from friends in Egypt. They may destroy our churches, but they can never destroy our faith. We need to stand with the Christians of Egypt. Now, when you study all the great civilizations of the past, good, bad, and indifferent, They were all destroyed when they allowed mass immigration. Multiculturalism destroyed any civilization, whether you're talking about the Persians, the Babylonians, the Greeks, Egypt, all of them destroyed. Persia, once a great civilization, destroyed by immigration in cities, just like what happened with Rome. Rome became a cesspool of vice and blood sports because there was all kinds of welfare goodies, you know, bread and circuses. And so that's why Constantine himself lost all hope for Rome, and he moved over to the east and he built an entirely new capital at Constantinople on the western side of the Bosphorus as the last edge of Europe looking into Asia. And he said, yeah, Rome is finished. Because it was morally destroyed. And, of course, the same happened to Persia. The country I've had a lot to do with, Sudan. How did Christianity die out in northern Sudan? As you can see here, this was once a great civilization. This is northern Sudan, what used to be called Nubia. Do you know, for 1,000 years, Christianity predominated northern Sudan. From the 6th century to the 15th century, Christianity was the official religion of three great northern Christian kingdoms. Black Christian kingdoms of Nubia, Elwa, and Makuria, later Dotawa. For 900 years, the black Christians of Sudan successfully resisted the southward expansion of Islam. See the shape of the cross and the way they built their churches? It's an historic fact that the Christian kingdoms of northern Sudan did not fall militarily. They fell through the continuous migration of Arab traders and merchants into Sudan, which eroded Christian civilization as the influence of Islam increased. As Sudanese intermarried with Arabs, and of course they had lots of money and they could have multiple wives, and Muslims came to dominate the marketplace and the trade routes, Christianity was exterminated in northern Sudan. In fact, the death knell came with the Bakt Agreement. The Sudanese Christian leaders agreed to peace treaty with the Arabs of Egypt on the condition that they sold 12,000 people in slavery to the Muslims every year in exchange for peace. Well, once you start to sell your own people or neighboring tribes, it comes to the same thing. The protection of God is lifted, the blessing of God is lifted, the hand of God was withdrawn, and the judgment of God fell. And northern Sudan, you look here, you can see the ancient pagan temple to the side, you can see the church basilica next to it, but now in ruins. And you also look at it and you think, nobody would build these things in the middle of desert. Well, it wasn't desert when they built it. The desert came there later. The whole land was cursed. Should you help the wicked and love those who hate the Lord? Because of this, the wrath of the Lord is upon you. Well, I've been working for a long time on a Christian history of Africa, and that's just one or couple of the chapters on Egypt and on Sudan. But today, Sudan is under Muslim dictatorship. Now, this particular character, Omar al-Bashir, he's been overthrown early this year, which is big news. We're not too sure who's taken over exactly, just a military junta. But I've documented the destruction and desecration of Christian graveyards, the burning of churches, the bombing of churches, scorched earth, the burning and bombing of farm areas and wildlife areas, external decorations by Muhammad and Sons. The graveyards of Christians in front of churches, we've been under fire, been bombarded in church services. I've ministered at least 1,200 times in Sudan on 27 different missions, and I've never ministered in a church or school that hadn't been bombed at least once. And some of them had been bombed, in this case, Fraser Cathedral 10 times, in a church in Nub Mountains 18 times in 12 months. This church here, on one mission, on another mission, destroyed by helicopter gunships. I was running a Muslim evangelism workshop, and these pastors walked for many kilometers, came to a destroyed venue, and they stood with their Christian flag and ashes, and they still wanted to be taught how to win their enemies to Christ. Bomb shelters. These people fighting for their faith against the onslaught of Islam, and to reach them was hard, very hard. We had to travel 8,000 kilometers just one way to reach them, and of course, using the Jesus form, helping them rebuilding their churches, delivering to them Bibles and books, often flown in, sometimes by DC-3s, way behind the lines in the Nub Mountains, being able to deliver tons of Bibles and books to people who are beleaguered, putting the Bible in their hands, in this case, the first Bible in the Moro language. We've actually got a copy in our reception area behind glass there. This is 3,000 Bibles in the Moro language, the first three being delivered to the church at Will Not Die Fraser Cathedral. In the Nuba Mountains of Sudan, delivering tons of Bibles and books and educational materials and also tools, film evangelism, equipping film evangelists, and walking from one side of the Nuba to the other. These are some of the people who are suffering under Islamic Jihad today, an island of Christianity in a sea of Islam, but they used to be Christian kingdoms, which fell to Islam. And so we need to teach the people how to learn from history, how civilizations commit suicide so that they don't continue to suffer as minorities in their own country, being bombed and hiding in caves. The story of which we've put, of course, in Faith Under Fire in Sudan and the Sudan DVDs. And now we've also got from the latest missions there being put into video format. And so that's available on our internet as well. We've got some of the newsletters about the recent missions that Aubrey and John and Ben and Hunter have done, and prayer posters on our websites. But most importantly, this new film, Missions to the Nuba Mountains of Sudan. Just 13 minutes, you can access it online, well worth watching and sharing with others, that people can see what's happening to our Christian brothers and sisters in Sudan. So I've just dealt with Byzantine, Egypt, and Sudan. Just three examples there. There are those warning us that what we're facing today is not a refugee crisis, it's a hijra. Hijra is jihad by immigration. It's to move to new land in order to take Islam there. Hijra is to immigrate for the cause of Allah. And in Islam, hijra is considered to be a highly meritorious act. The Quran declares, and whoever immigrates for the cause of Allah will find on earth many locations in abundance. A senior imam, Sheikh Mohammed Ayyid, in the Al-Aqsa Mosque in Jerusalem, one of the most important mosques to the Muslims, declared that Muslims must use the migrant crisis to breed with Europeans and conquer their countries. In fact, the words he used were, breed out the blue eyes and blonde hair, Arabize Scandinavia. We will breed children of them because we will conquer their countries and trample them underfoot, Allah willing. And literally in the mosques, the recordings exist of the imam telling them, marry them, divorce them, fornicate with them, commit adultery with them, but breed out the white, blue-eyed, yellow-haired devils. Destroy them. Islam gained its first foothold in Europe in 711 with the Umayyad conquest of Spain. They advanced into France, but in an epic battle at near Tours or Poitiers in 732, which is exactly 100 years after the death of Muhammad. So the first century after Muhammad's death was the great expansion of Islam. But the high watermark was at Tours in France, just south of Paris. They were defeated by Charles Martel the Hammer, whose shield wall stood in great discipline, withstanding six furious charges by this colossal Arab cavalry. And when the Arabs fled, the infantry stayed in their ranks in the shield wall, which often what would happen is they would break when they saw them flee, and then the cavalry would charge again. But that's what happened in the Battle of Hastings. But these men stood firm in their shield wall, and only the cavalry charged and chased them. And they slept in their ranks, in their positions at the crest of the hill, waiting. Next morning, cavalry scouts went out and they saw the Muslims have abandoned their camp and they were in retreat. And then they harassed them all the way back across the Pyrenees. That was the high water mark of Islam. It took 800 years to free Spain from the grip of Islam. 8 centuries Spain was oppressed by Islam. Islam entered Eastern and Southeastern Europe in the 13th century. The Ottoman Turkish Muslim Empire crushed and oppressed Albania, Kosovo, Macedonia, Bulgaria, Bosnia, Romania, Hungary, Greece, parts of Ukraine, and Russia for centuries. They even got to the gates of Vienna and they conquered Budapest. Budapest, the heart of Europe and Hungary, what today is the capital. They looted the city, killed the king in battle. He had an army of something like 20,000 going out against hundreds of thousands of Turks. The Muslims enslaved 200,000 Hungarian Christians, dragged them back to Turkey as slaves. It's understandable, therefore, that it's the East European Christians who've been the most vocal in resisting the latest Islamic refugee Trojan horse invasion. Places like Hungary and Poland have said, we won't take one Muslim refugee. Not one. And why? They know what it's like. historically to be under Islam. Their country suffered centuries of oppression, enslavement by the Muslim Turks. And by the way, it's an intriguing thing to notice that you've got more Christians in Eastern Europe today than Western Europe practicing Christians. In fact, in this boardroom, I was interviewing Patrick Johnson, Operation World, top missiologist in the world some time ago. And he said to me, Peter, where do you think is the largest number of born-again Bible-believing Christians in Europe today? And I didn't guess right. He said, it's Russia. Russia's got the largest number of Bible-believing born-again Christians. Not percentage, number. Second largest, Ukraine. Third largest, Romania. What do they have in common? All behind what used to be the Iron Curtain. In other words, decades of violent communist persecution and decades of atheist indoctrination was less effective in crushing the church than the seduction of materialism and Hollywood and secular humanist education and evolutionism and all the sick, sordid, defiling vices of the West has done more damage to Western Europe spirituality than all the communism and atheism did to Eastern Europe. It's something when you look here and you see there's some pretty big crosses in the East. Prime Minister of Hungary, Viktor Orban, has declared, we are not facing a refugee crisis. We are facing a migration crisis. Let us not forget that those who are arriving have been raised in another religion and represent a radically different culture. Most of them are not Christians, but Muslim. This is an important question because Europe and European identity is rooted in Christianity. Now, this is the Prime Minister of Hungary. Hungary used to be an atheistic communist state that persecuted the church. Isn't this fascinating? Still quoting from Prime Minister Orban, is it not worrying in itself that European Christianity is now barely able to keep Europe Christian? If we lose sight of this, the idea of Europe could become a minority interest in its own continent. Now, this is a picture showing where most Christians are. Notice the darker the blue, the higher the percentage of Christians. The lighter, the less. Now, you can see that Europe has traditionally, and even now, is a major bastion of Christianity, even if many of them are inactive and so on. You can see that South America and Europe and Central America have a very high percentage of Christians. But this is Christians, so this counts Catholics, Orthodox, Protestant, Evangelicals, Pentecostals all together. So it's not delineating evangelical Christians, it's just any kind of Christians. And of course, that's why Poland's so dark, because they're about 90-something percent Catholic. There's very few Protestants in Poland, but Poland is resisting. The Catholicism is resisting Islam. Here you can see the number of Christians. The size of the circle represents in millions. How, here you can see from 100 million for the big circles down to the small and so on. And so the small circles is 1 million, and the big circles are over 100 and 50 million. So Russia and America would be over the 150 million, for example. Christians. Notice in our continent, Nigeria, Ethiopia, Congo, and South Africa, Kenya, are major centers of Christianity. But here, Europe is in danger of being swamped by Muslims. Look at this, very disturbing. Total fertility rates of Christians by country. So, the very light, under 2.1%. What's important about that? Anything under 2.1% is declining population. You need 2.2% to maintain your level. And if you want to grow, you've got to be like 2.5 or so. So the darker the red, the higher the fertility rates of the people, meaning having children. Versus, now, what does it tell you? The whole of Europe, except for France and Southern Ireland, is in decline. They're not replacing their own populations. And I can tell you why France is increasing. It's from the Muslims, actually. That's because this isn't distinguishing between them. But you can see Indonesia's in massive growth, Pakistan is in massive growth, most of Central Africa's in massive growth. South Africa's actually in basic decline here, at least according to this chart. Fascinating, disturbing. Zsolt Bayer, a politician in Hungary, declared in Budapest there are all kinds of weapons. They're traditional weapons, they're chemical weapons, atomic weapons. And now we see there's also racial weapons. This is a weapon that they, the invisible hands, have employed against Europe. Why has everyone from everywhere and all at once decided to start heading towards Europe? Why? Let us declare lively and level-headedly. This is an artificial, manufactured mass migration, and its goal is the final and irreversible transformation of Europe's ethnic and religious composition. Sharia for France, and by the way, it's for the French to go to hellfire. And for this, they've already produced the necessary ideologies, everything from secularism through Islam. Our leaders in Brussels, meaning the EU, want to sell Europe from over our heads, and they want to destroy our Europe. So the Hungarian army has determined to defend its borders without NATO and without EU help or permission. And so Hungary has been the front line, and Bulgaria and Slovakia and Poland have followed as well in saying, no, we won't take one Muslim migrant. Prime Minister Robert Fico of Slovakia, what used to be part of Czechoslovakia, observed, since Slovakia is a Christian country, okay, this used to be a communist country. I've been in Bratislava, underground church meeting back when the war was still up. And, you know, to think you've now got a promise to talk about Slovakia is a Christian country. I'm astounded. Anyway, we cannot tolerate an influx of 300,000 to 400,000 Muslim migrants who would like to start building mosques all over our land and trying to change the nature, culture, and values of the state. If we do not start telling the truth about migration, we will never move from this spot. British author Peter Hitchens has written, we will not save refugees by destroying our own country. Actually, we cannot do what we like with this country. We inherited it from our parents and our grandparents, and we have a duty to hand it on to our children and grandchildren, preferably improved and certainly undamaged. We cannot just give it away to complete strangers on an impulse because it makes us feel good about ourselves. Thanks to 1,000 years of uninvaded peace, we have developed astonishing levels of trust, safety, and freedom. Now, what he's meaning is the last time Britain was invaded was 1066. But that's no longer actually true. Because last year, more people entered England than all the amount of people who entered England between 1066 and 1945. Just consider that in 1 year. They're being invaded. Britain's being invaded now. They're pretending they're not, but they are being invaded. The fact that they arrive on British Airways doesn't make it anything less of an invasion. I'm amazed at how relaxed we are about giving all this away. Mass migration, mass immigration means we adapt to them when they should be adapting to us. So now, on the basis of an emotional spasm dressed up as generosity, are we going to abandon this legacy and decline our obligations to pass it on like the enfeebled, wasted heirs of an ancient inheritance letting the great house and estate go to ruin? Just think of how many Jane Austen type novels where you've got this unworthy heir of a great estate and, you know, the whole thing's going to go to wreck and ruin. Now that's just one farm, but now we're talking about the whole country. I can see neither sense nor justice in allowing these things to become a pretext for an unstoppable demographic revolution in which Europe merges its culture and economy with North Africa and the Middle East. If we let this happen, Europe would lose almost all the things which make others want to live here. Why do many of the migrants actually want to go to Europe for a better life than what they've got where they are? Well, there won't be a better life. In fact, there won't be missionaries and there won't be aid and there won't be Red Cross and all these other things helping them in their countries if you destroy the missionary-sending base home states of these charities and groups. There are three stages of jihad: immigrate, infiltrate, and caliphate. Immigrate, get into the Western lands. Infiltrate Western governments. Well, right now you've got something like 120 towns and cities in England that have Muslim mayors, including London. Or should we say Londonistan? And then you have caliphate, they implement Sharia law. I've spoken to Muslims in England, in London, saying, if you got the majority, would you abandon the monarchy and British law? Of course, we'd replace it immediately with Sharia law. And, no, there'd be no royal family. The Queen would be out and so on and so forth. And no, we'd turn Westminster Abbey and St. Paul's into mosques. And they're quite straightforward. So this is plain theft, invasion, and revolution being talked about. It's not we coming here to adapt. So when Muslims are few in numbers, we're from the religion of peace and tolerance. When they're numerous, we deserve special status. And when outnumber everyone else, it's Islam or else. Isn't that the way? I mean, it's always that way. Turkish Prime Minister Erdogan, one of the most evil people out there, who's just done a treacherous invasion of northern Syria, wiping out vast amounts of Christian Medes, what are called the Kurds today, but they were the Medes, you know, Darius the Mede, who threw Daniel Blinds in those kind of Medes. The mosques are our barracks, the domes are helmets, the minarets are bayonets, and the faithful are our soldiers. There's no doubt that Erdogan sees Islamic mosques as part of a military advance of Islam. They never came to coexist. They came to conquer and to dominate. Muslims are invading countries all over the world under the guise of being refugees and simply seeking peaceful asylum. But Muslim jihadists are seizing the opportunity to plant their ideology in the West, a Trojan horse. Many are speaking of an Islamic invasion Trojan horse, and it's like an unstoppable train coming. I wrote this newsletter, Resisting the Islamic Invasion Trojan Horse, on the basis of a presentation I gave to Ministers Conference in Zurich in Switzerland to over 400 of the ministers from all over Europe, as far afield as Russia and Romania, and warned them it's reformation or Islamization. If they cannot get back to the Bible in Europe, they'll lose it. Now, here's just one example of Greek customs intercepting 14 containers full of weapons and ammunition described as plastic furniture for refugee camps. Now, that's the intercepted ones. You wonder how much... This doesn't happen by accident. This isn't one person slipping in something in his luggage. This is containers we're talking about. Is the refugee crisis an Islamic invasion? And the facts are, yes, it is. Pretend to be a refugee in order to gain access to your chosen country. Play the minority card while outpopulating on a scale of more than 5-1. Infiltrate politics. Call anyone a racist or bigot if they don't agree with you. Islamophobe. Implement a watered-down version of Sharia law with the help of leftists. Extraordinary how the leftists are so adamant about feminism and LGBT rights, and yet they're willing to accommodate Muslims who want to execute feminists and execute gays for that matter. And they don't seem to see the problem because they so hate Christianity that they're willing to embrace Islam because Islam's the enemy of Christianity. Just because they hate Christianity so much, they don't seem to mind. They would be some of the first to get in the neck, literally, if Islam succeeded. Muslim radicals have a definite plan to conquer the entire world. We shall soon collect them in the name of the coming caliphates, the Ayatollah Khomeini. We will say to you, these are our sons, receive them, or we will send our armies to you. Another commentator observed, this refugee crisis is a master ploy to sneak well-trained ISIS, Islamic State terrorists, disguised as refugees into Europe to start an insurgency in the cities of Europe. So what are the facts and the forces behind this refugee crisis? The Islamic State published a document entitled Libya, the Strategic Gateway for an Islamic State. And by the way, much as none of us liked Gaddafi, there were no refugees coming out of Libya when he was then. Once American NATO had bombed him out, Libya descended to chaos and suddenly millions were pouring into Europe using Sicily and Italy as the gateway to pour in there. And weapons from his arsenal were suddenly freely floating all over the world, just showing that you cause destabilization in your neighbor's house, it's going to destabilize you. Like you start a fire in your neighbor's house, what's going to stop the fire coming to your house? And that's exactly what happened. In this publication, Islamic State exhorts Muslims to go to Libya and cross from there as refugees into Europe. Islam will dominate the world. Freedom can go to hell. In front of the British Bobby in downtown London, East On. The publication informs refugees that weapons from Gaddafi's arsenal are plentiful and easy to obtain in Libya, so the country has a long coast. It looks upon the southern Crusader states, which can be reached with ease with even a rudimentary boat. Now, some people have been spending some time at Facebook to be able to notice similarities between people who are now refugees and how they used to have pictures posted of being soldiers, and this is intriguing. ISIS claims they've successfully infiltrated over 20,000 jihadists into Europe in just the 1 year of 2015. And here's another one of these refugees in Europe who plainly was part of the Al-Nusra Front in Syria not that long before. And here's another character who was obviously, you know, one of these jihadists in Syria, and now he's a refugee in the West. And here's somebody serving McDonald's or something in Germany, but he was one of the ISIS terrorists killing Christians in Syria before. These are just a few examples. Here is a banner posted on an autobahn in Germany. Either your children will worship Allah or they will be killed. So, Saudi aims to Islamize Germany. Apparently, Merkel asked if they would be willing to take some refugees from Syria, but they weren't willing to take a single one. But they offered to build 200 mosques in Germany. They've not been willing to receive any refugees themselves, nor are they offering food, shelter, medicine, or jobs for the migrants, but they will build their mosques. In every country where Muslims are in the minority, they're obsessed with minority rights. But in every country with a Muslim majority, there are no minority rights. Saudi Arabia, Qatar, Kuwait, Bahrain, United Arab Emirates, all close to war-ravaged Syria, are not willing to house any Syrian refugees fleeing the conflict, which they themselves are sponsoring. These are the very countries who have paid for and enabled and armed insurgencies that caused the civil war. When they called a civil war in Syria, understand, it's not a civil war. It's an international war. The civil war has Muslims from virtually every country on the planet, including Muslims from Canada, Australia, New Zealand, all over the world, Britain, in there fighting with money and weapons from Saudi Arabia and Qatar, and they call this a civil war. No, it's an international Islamist revolution attempting to overthrow the government of Syria. To call it a civil war is pathetic. The British Prime Minister at the time, David Cameron, talking about 2015 when all this massive immigration was going, said the United Kingdom must not only act with the head, but not with only with the heart, but with the head. Well, that would be nice. He pointed out that Britain, more than any other country, is helping refugees with direct aid in the Middle East, helping them where they are. He also noted Britain's currently not only fighting terrorism, but coping with the problems of economic migrants and the humanitarian problems caused by them. That's putting it nice and politely. However, in Brussels, the self-proclaimed capital of Europe, the president of the European Commission, Jean-Claude Juncker, who no one ever remembers voting for, how did he become president of Europe? He insisted that immigration from Muslim countries is a solution to Europe's demographic decline. Just to remind you, I'm sure many of you have seen this before, but this is the famous Bruegel Tower of Babel portrait. This is what the EU poster depicts. Europe, many tongues, one voice. And this is what their Strasbourg Parliament looks like. They've built their Strasbourg Pond, where I've been there to give testimony to. And it's built in the shape of the Tower of Babel, incomplete, with scaffolding as part of the design structure. And their own posters, look how they take the stars and move them to the occultic pentagram, where the point goes down, so that it looks like a goat's head with the goat's beard, the goat's ears, and then the goat's horns. Interesting. Many tongues, one voice. They're trying to reverse Babel. And so what you've got is, let us not forget we're an aging continent in a demographic decline. Europe has made the mistake in the past of distinguishing between Jews, Christians, and Muslims. There's no religion, no belief, no philosophy when it comes to refugees. Oh. Really, this is Juncker, the so-called unelected president of Europe. Here we see the philosophy of EU globalists. The sharp decline of the birth rate of Europeans has been a direct result of aggressive population control tactics, massive propaganda of overpopulation, promoting birth control, euthanasia, abortion, sterilizations, massive poisoning of our food supplies. You wonder how can people be allergic to everything from bread to nuts. No, they're allergic to all the chemicals that are being sprayed on the food, is more like it. And the pharmaceutical industry doesn't create cures, it creates customers. The world's never been so unhealthy than it is now. Public education, state education, mandatory vaccinations, pharmaceutical-based industrial medicine, welfare slavery, pensions, prisons, I should say, abuse, injustice, ethnic discrimination, attacks on natural sexual identity, prostitution, paedophilia and abortion are all really part of some diabolical agenda to transform image bearers of God into subjects of Moloch. Aristotle warned 2,400 years ago, tolerance and apathy are the last virtues of a dying society. Dr. James Kennedy said tolerance is the last virtue of a depraved society. When you have an immoral society that has blatantly, proudly violated all of the commands of God, there is one last virtue they insist on: tolerance for their immorality. And the terminal stage of any civilization is legalized and tolerated and promotes and celebrated homosexuality. That is the terminal stage of a civilization, because families are the building block of society. And when you have openly celebrated and promoted homosexual perversion, then it is the death of that society. And where's the church? Well, if we were on the solid rock, it wouldn't be a problem. But unfortunately, the amount of church been moving out through compromise and complacency and tolerance, they've moved the church off the solid rock of God's word, more onto what's popular, what's acceptable, what's trendy, instead of what's biblical. Here is a cathedral in Britain where the bishop put a helter-skelter in the church and decided to slide down. I don't know what this is meant to symbolize, but I think it shows the church has slidden into apostasy. And what is this? You can't even tell if it's Christian or pagan. But Hollywood has so defiled the world with its sick, perverted, pedophile mentality. At the entrance to the gate of a university in South Africa, the following message was posted: destroying any nation does not require the use of atomic bombs or the use of long-range missiles. It only requires the lowering of the quality of education and allowing cheating in examinations by the students. Patients die at the hands of such doctors. Buildings collapse at the hands of such engineers. Money is lost at the hands of such economists and accountants. Humanity dies at the hands of such religious scholars. Justice is lost at the hands of such judges. The collapse of education is the collapse of a nation. This is how civilizations commit suicide. And then, of course, you get these stupid fashions. The idea came from somewhere. They wanted to look like dustbin bags. And then you get these pagans tattooing themselves. Whoops, sorry. Oh, this is a Christian. Oh, this is the leader of the revival. The Lakeland revival. This is this Todd Bentley, who spent $100,000 on tattooing his whole body because he claimed an angel told him to do it. Even a God's word commands you not to, because it's an abomination. But this is a pagan. This is a Christian. See the difference? Christian, pagan, right? Yeah. Okay, now we know what this chap is, because he got the horns implanted because he wanted to look like Satan. And I don't know, maybe he succeeded, but do you know how much it costs to do this sort of thing to your body? And there are even places in the West that are setting up Moloch idols. This is where they used to sacrifice babies. And why not? I mean, it's not like our countries aren't killing more babies than probably all the pagan civilizations even did. They don't want tolerance. They want you to bow down to their idols. I love this one. There are more than two genders. You can purchase online. But there's only two genders available. You can order the men fit or the women fit. But there's more than two genders. But you can only order them in two genders. Gender is a pseudoscientific product of Western colonialism. It's a manipulation tactic of capitalist societies outside of our cages. 100 genders will bloom. 100 genders? I mean, there's not that many letters in the alphabet. Pagans for gay rights. Well, this makes sense. I understand why pagans would be for gay rights, but why the Christians? We live in a society where homosexuals lecture us on morals, transvestites lecture us on human biology, baby killers lecture us on human rights, and socialists lecture us on economics. The demographic decline referred to by the EU official, Juncker, is a direct result of the EU's core policies. Why is Europe in economic and demographic decline? Well, because they've been promoting euthanasia, abortion, sterilizations, transgender, LGBT, and so on. Now the massive influx of Muslim immigrants to Europe is being orchestrated to bring about a transformation of Europe to Eurabia and the New World Order. The subverting of stable governments in Africa. Just think of every country in Africa was stable in 1950. And they subverted it, destroyed one after the other, And tens of millions of people have been killed in Africa by their own governments, part of the Cold War and all the rest of it. And this has created a diaspora where 150 million Africans are now living outside of Africa. 150 million in a worldwide diaspora. Not mentioning Asia and South America. In fact, a vast amount of Asia seems to have moved to Canada and the United States, especially California. And stimulates a vast amount of refugee population in Europe, North America, South Africa, and Australia. This poor chap's crawling over by the Limpopo near Bight Bridge to get in South Africa from the workers' paradise in Zimbabwe. My first visit to America in January 1988, I was walking around with a congressman in town, and I made a comment about all the countries that Jimmy Carter had betrayed, 13 countries betrayed to communism in his worthless 4 years. And he said, well, you've got to understand the rationale behind politics here in D.C. He says, for every country we betray, we get a whole lot of new restaurants here. He said, look, we're in the street. He said, yeah, you've got the Vietnamese restaurant, you've got Chinese restaurants, we've got the Thai restaurants. And he's pointing around all these, and Korean there, and the Mongolian. And I could have throttled this man. I mean, he thought that was funny, but considering that I was from one of the countries betrayed by the cursed government, it's not funny that they keep subverting governments all over the place. America has destabilized something like a third of the planet, betrayed country after country into the hands of mass murdering thugs like Joseph Stalin, Mao Zedong, Robert Mugabe, and so on. By dramatically decreasing populations of those countries traditionally Christian, and by exploding the populations of other races, the goal is a dramatic change in demographics and the death of the West. In fact, that's the title of a book by Patrick Johnson. We have just come from our 11th of November, Poppy Day, remembering the soldiers who've died in the wars. Bear in mind, the millions and millions and millions of Christian Europeans who killed one another so enthusiastically and efficiently in the First and Second World War are nothing compared to how many millions of our own babies we've killed through abortion since. And who's filling the gaps? Well, our enemies like Islam. The unemployment is rampant in the European Union, especially amongst young Europeans. Juncker has said, I'm strongly in favor of allowing refugees to work from day one on their arrival in Europe. Ahead of Europeans? The sharp decline in the birth rate of Europeans and a massive influx of Muslim immigrants into Europe is being orchestrated to bring about a transformation of Europe into Eurabia. And the goal of all this is a world population more amenable to manipulation and control by globalists, to be railroaded into the New World Order. And here's the face of Planned Parenthood, Cecil Richards, CEO, manages to abort something in the region of 327,000 babies a year. She's, you can Google her, weeping after Trump's election, pleading for donations because the American government had cut something like 100-something million dollars off their budget, and now they can't provide these services to the poor people in depressed countries like Africa and so on and so forth. Like, you know, please help us kill more black babies, send more money. And immediately Canada sent $12 million from their state budget to help offset, and countries were helping the American Planned Parenthood because they were being defunded by Trump's evil, fascist, right-wing, extremist, Make America Great Again administration. Promoting birth control, abortion, sterilizations, a murder. The globalists have been involved in demographic engineering. And this cartoon's telling you something. Abortion clinics for the local population, maternity clinics for the Muslim immigrants. Something's wrong with this picture. This is what Planned Parenthood's headquarters looks like. And that's what a Mayan human sacrifice temple looked like. Accident or design. Their goal is to dramatically bring down the population of Europeans and Americans. Why? Because they are traditionally Christian countries that have been the backbone of missions and charities and works raising other people up overseas. So consider this. Your grandmother had four children, your mother had two children, you have one child, your child adopts some cats and dogs. Europeans have one wife and two children. Ideally, not even most of them do that. Whereas a Muslim can have four wives and 12 children. Outbred, outnumbered, outvoted, out. This is an actual poster in Britain. Imagine a city less crowded. Do your part. Get sterilized. Yay.
I have to mention that gentleman that was carried into the old mutual offices. 45-year-old. Her father, 31 kids. That came to my knowledge.
Can I guess that this person was Islamic, maybe?
No, no, he's a Zulu.
Okay. Probably a polygamist, I'm guessing.
You know, he apparently had a black book of all the women.
Well, at least he's kept track.
And,
yeah.
And the phone numbers and all that.
Only remembers all their names and dates
of
birth.
Yeah, he had a book of that.
So he died. So what happened is he was in the news because he died. And the insurance company didn't want to pay out, so his relatives gave him into the...
They put him in a bag, in one of his blue
and
bags.
And put him in the, and he's said, we'll come back when you buy us out.
So they went and checked their bank account to see if they paid them, and then they went to fetch
him. And then got the body.
Did any of you see
that? No, that sounds bizarre. But I don't know, you can probably recognize these figures. These are probably some known kiddie cartoon pictures, but then, you know, get sterilized, yay! So the message to Europe is stop having children for the environment. The message to Africa is come to Europe because of declining population. He has actual adverts or articles in The Guardian. Want to fight climate change, have fewer children. And here's another article from The Guardian. Refugee influx helps halt decline in Germany's population. I mean, how's that for... Forget about two-faced. This is really... devilishly, diabolically duplicitous. Your great-grandmother, 12 kids. Your grandmother, 6 kids. Your mother, 2 kids. You, an abortion, a dog. That's not even a joke anymore. Then by betraying stable governments in Africa, Asia and South America, I just think of Rhodesia as one example, amongst many, bring about economic collapses and a vast movement of refugee population means stimulating Europe, North America, South Africa and Australia. This, by the way, is a picture taken in Vienna Central Railway Station. Refugees are a tidal wave or tsunami. So you've got people like Barbara Spector offering the poisoned apple of multiculturalism to Cinderella. I remember as Sleeping Beauty, I remember I was going on a mission leaving and my daughter Andrea, who was only about 4 at the time, said, Daddy, don't take any poisoned apples from wicked witches. I thought, well, that's good advice at any time. But unfortunately, Europe has not listened to that advice, they're taking a poisoned apple. Enoch Powell in 1968, that's a long time ago, warned, whole areas, towns and parts of towns across England will be occupied by sections of the immigrant and immigrant descent population. It is like watching a nation busily engaged in heaping up its own funeral pyre. They found their wives unable to obtain hospital beds in childbirth. Their children unable to obtain school places. Their homes and neighborhoods changed beyond recognition. Their plans and prospects for the future defeated for reasons which they could not comprehend and in pursuance of a decision by default on which they were never consulted, they found themselves made strangers in their own country. Now, at the time, he was ridiculed for that. His famous blood on the streets, blood will flow in the streets speech. And yet he's been proven right on every point. 11 Londoners stabbed to death in 16 days. Listen to these. German Foreign Minister Joschka Fischer. Germany is to be contained from the outside and heterogeneous from the inside by influx, diluted, so to speak. Professor of Anthropology in Oslo. The most important blank spot exists now in deconstructing the majority so thoroughly that can never be called the majority again. Here's a party leader of the Swedish Social Democrats. The white majority is the problem. The Swedes must be integrated in the new Sweden. The old Sweden will not return. By any dictionary definition of genocide, that is genocide. You're trying to destroy a people in their own homeland. It is inevitable, in my view, that Australia will become a Eurasian country within the next century or two, says Bill Hayden, Australian foreign minister at the time. Australian, Asians and Europeans will marry each other. A new race will emerge. I happen to think that's desirable. Now that we want to wipe out the white race, and that is the term. You hear it over and over. Whites are oppressors, non-whites are victims. But race doesn't exist, yet I love racial diversity, and I celebrate our differences because we're all the same. So let's destroy diversity by mixing together, but only in the white countries. Make sense? When whites fought for the rights of blacks, they were called heroes. When whites fought for the rights of Jews, they were called heroes. When whites stand up for their own rights and survival, they're called racist, bigot, white supremacists, and worse. A racist is someone who wins an argument against a liberal. Leon Trotsky, the People's Commissar for the Soviet Union and founder of the Cheka and NKVD and so on, he invented the word racist in order to counter anyone who attacked communism was obviously a racist. It's a term to shut down dissent and criticism. That's why we believe in smashing cultural Marxism. President Milos Zeman of the Czech Republic declared, "No one has invited these migrants to my country, but once they arrive, they must respect the laws of the host country or leave." In Denmark, Andreas Kalm, the Secretary General of the Danish Refugee Council, warned that the present refugee crisis could lead to the total collapse of European society. And that is a very valid concern. Kalm declared, "Europe is facing a total Armageddon scenario. We're experiencing an historic imbalance between very high numbers of refugees and migrants and the global capacity to provide them with protection and assistance. The answer cannot be that Europe imports surplus populations. We cannot be required to destroy our own society." It's taken centuries to build these cathedrals and societies, and now you're just going to destroy it in one generation? The Danish Minister of Finance, Claus Frederiksen, said, "I'm most indignant over the Arab countries who are rolling in money, who only take in very few refugees, countries like Saudi Arabia. It's completely scandalous." Actually, he's exaggerating. They take in no refugees. It's not even very few. Many have pointed out Saudi Arabia is a well-organized tent city of 100,000 air-conditioned fireproof tents, which can comfortably accommodate 3 million people, which only are used for a couple of weeks each year for pilgrims who come on the Hajj. 3 million refugees could easily be housed in a tent city outside Mecca. However, to date, Saudi Arabia is not known to have taken in a single refugee from Syria. And when asked why not, they said, they could be terrorists. Well, exactly. But how come that's not a concern for other countries? The German Interior Minister, Thomas de Maizière, observed, "The migration crisis presents a formidable challenge." Here you can see, by the way, the amount of asylum applicants per 1,000 of the applicants. And of course, Sweden's getting the highest amount. "It is bigger than any of us have previously thought." Just look at this. You've got a war in Syria. So where'd they go? Turkey? No, they've got to go all the way to Sweden. Why? More freebies and social welfare benefits for people doing nothing. You see, it's not about, if you're a real refugee, you flee to where there's no war, the next country, closest possible, so you can go back one day. But why are they going all the way over to a place like Sweden, Germany? Well, because they give a lot of free things. "It's bigger than any of us have previously thought, socially, politically, economically, culturally. Now we will get hundreds of thousands of Muslims with an Arab background. Between 15 and 20% of adult migrants are illiterate." Of course, they don't speak the local language either. Joseph Joffrey, publisher of Die Zeit, has written that the government seems completely oblivious to the long-term consequences of importing hundreds of thousands of Muslims. He asked if Germany is now meant to turn into a country of immigration, accepting different colors, faiths, origins. So Germany is evolving into kind of America, where you need not be born American, but become one. This is a mental and emotional revolution. People haven't thought that way before. And biblically, a nation is an ethno-linguistic people's group of a shared faith, which is why Hebrews are Hebrews. Even after 400 years in Egypt, they didn't become Egyptians. You're not a geographic accident. You are, as Jesus said with the Great Commission, make disciples of every nation. The word he used was ethne. A nation is an ethno-linguistic people group, biblically. When the flood of Muslim refugees have finally settled down in new homes, Germany could unexpectedly find itself housing the continent's largest Muslim minority, and it has already. Most of those who are called Syrian refugees are not, in fact, from Syria. And, in fact, you can see they're coming from everywhere, from Bangladesh, Sudan, Somalia, Iraq, Nigeria, Eritrea, Afghanistan, and so on. In 1 year, Germany got a Muslim refugees. I mean, as I said, Angela Merkel has destroyed Germany. A German reporter, Jürgen Todenhofer, who successfully embedded with the Islamic State, reported in his book, Inside ISIS, 10 Days in Islamic State, The terrorists plan on killing several hundred million people. The West is drastically underestimating the power of ISIS, who are planning nuclear annihilation across the globe. A nuclear tsunami preparing the largest religious cleansing in history. As someone who is inside the movement. Okay, so how many Muslims are there in Europe? Well, actually, the statistics have changed dramatically, and they're so changing so fast it's hard to keep up with it. Here you can see from the Muslim world where most of them have their majority. And you can see, well, Indonesia through to Kazakhstan, all the way through North Africa and so on. Now, you can start to see the spread of Islam, but this is already out of date. When you look at how many, you can see the red is where there's more than 200 million, which is Indonesia. That's the largest Muslim state in the world and so on. But now, this is getting to 2010 statistics. 2010 is a long time ago already. But, no, I think this is 2015 stats. Correct. Germany's already got 4.7 million Muslims. France got 4.7 million. United Kingdom, 2.9 million. There weren't 30,000 Muslims in England when I was born, 1960. Italy, 2.2 million, and so you can continue. Even little Luxembourg, which is a miniature little place you could drive across in a few minutes, there's even 10,000 Muslims there. So this is very serious, and you can see France has got the highest percentage of Muslims, but Germany's got the largest number of Muslims in the continent, meaning in the EU. Of course, Turkey's got mountains more. And so here already you can see the 2010 stats here of how many Muslims there were and what the percentage was and so on. So above is in dark, it's the percentage, and below it's the number. But in fact, it's just gotten out of control since then. I can't get more recent statistics than these. Again, here, it's mostly on 2010, but the projection even then was how it would grow from 6% in Germany to 19%, from 8% in France to 31%. These are the projections that they are estimating. This looks like they've got 2010 stats, but they're projecting to 2014. Europe's largest Muslim population is plainly Germany and France, neck and neck, followed by United Kingdom. I mean, that's, by the way, in the time of the Reformation, Britain did not have 3 million people in the whole island. Now you've got about as many Muslims there as there were the entire population of the British Isles at the time of the Reformation. British MEP Janice Atkinson declared, "This is not a refugee crisis. This is a massive crisis of illegal immigration, which must be resisted for what it is. It's an invasion." Nigel Farage declared to the BBC, "Genuine refugees have tended to be groups of people, ethnic groups or religious groups who are directly under persecution, fleeing in fear of their lives." You know, like here you've got families, mostly women and children. But the ones arriving in Germany, all young men, military age. Where's their wives? Where's their children? Where's their grandparents? The problem we have right now, if you look at the definition of the EU's common asylum policy, it includes everyone, even people fleeing poverty. That's not a genuine refugee. This is what European cities look like. And I've been in Paris and I have seen where their streets look like this all over the place. People just putting up tents and parking and littering and causing chaos. US Ambassador John Bolton warned spreading terrorism, armed conflict and collapsing political authority in the Middle East are causing this present crisis. And this is someone appointed by Obama whose very State Department was actually doing the destabilizing. Europe is being overwhelmed by the sheer numbers of people on the move, thereby losing control of the decisions of who to admit and who to turn away. And these concerns are legitimate. Still quoting from the American ambassador. "There is serious and rising Islamic terrorist threat hidden within the tides of people seeking refuge. And most of the refugees, 79%, are going to Europe." Why? Europe's got massive welfare. Welfare is the magnet. You can come to Europe and you don't need to work. You don't need to have a job. You don't need to do anything. You can just live on the fat of the land, leech of the system, be a parasite, and nothing is demanded of you. Arthur Krenkov in the New York Observer wrote, "Europe is experiencing a massive movement of people not seen since the aftermath of the Second World War. Unlike the end of the war, however, none of the masses currently on a move are Europeans. This is an invasion from outside, not just destabilizing forced removals within Europe. As hundreds of thousands of people continue to arrive on Europe's doorsteps and throng her roads and railway lines, the majority of immigrants who have arrived in Europe so far are not Syrian. So to call it a Syrian crisis isn't even accurate. Less than a third are. The rest come from a miscellany of European, Middle Eastern, South Asian countries. The majority are single, healthy-looking young men. David Greenfield of the Freedom Center said the Syrian refugee crisis that the media is bleating about is not a crisis. The Syrian refugees they champion are neither Syrian nor refugees. Fake Syrian passports are cheaper than an EU politician's virtue and easier to come by. Just about anyone who speaks enough Arabic to pass the scrutiny of a European bureaucrat can come with his two wives and take a turn at the carousel of a welfare state to bring the Muslim terrorists of tomorrow to our towns and cities. And their gratitude will be as short-lived as our budget. Islam uses freedom and tolerance to destroy freedom and tolerance. A head of the United Nations High Commission for Refugees camp called the refugees the most difficult refugees I've ever seen. In Italy, Muslim African refugees rejected pasta and demanded food from their own countries. When you come to Italy, you'd expect to get pasta. Also, mobile phone charging stations so that destitute refugees can check on their Facebook accounts. It had to be done because the refugees in Italy were throwing rocks at the police while demanding free Wi-Fi. There is a tawdry sense of entitlement of the Muslim refugees that the media champions. Changing face of London. And all of this is possible because you've had these secular humanists trying to pull out the Christian foundation of civilization. And the whole edifice is built on Christian civilization. Everything's going to come crashing down. If you don't have respect for life, respect for property, fear of God, love for your neighbor, it can't work. You can't have the societies we have without Christian foundation. And we can see in South Africa, we've moved from a society where we used to have open doors, open locks, no fences and so on. Now you need burglar bars and security gates around churches. And 1984, George Orwell shows the Ministry of Truth is going to be punishing thought crimes. And that's happening. Because if you see these things and you say the kind of things I've been saying, next thing you're guilty of a thought crime. 1984 style. And so they actually have this whole thing of denigrating Christianity and elevating the tradition of the other peoples. Everything was fine until white people showed up. We could sacrifice to our hearts to attend, rip out beating hearts. And so they used to, they actually have just celebrated Happy Indigenous Peoples Day. And so some people facetiously posted these because, you know, every single tribe and civilization practiced slavery, human sacrifice, and many cannibalism before Christianity arrived. What are we meant to be celebrating? Truth sounds like hate to those who hate the truth. We live in a generation of emotionally weak people. Everything has to be watered down because it's offensive, including the truth. Truth is the only thing people won't believe. I am astounded at this absolute addiction to superhero ridiculous nonsense on the screens. I've lost all patience with it. I can't bear to watch another Marvel comic, Avengers, anything. It's like, it is ridiculous. What is it? It is the desire of secular people to want the supernatural. They won't accept the supernatural of the Bible, of Christianity, so they invent their own alternate reality, which is balachlik, pathetic, ridiculous, beyond ridiculous. You take something like Avatar, where mountains can float in the, just float, but gravity still happens because you can fall off a ship and you fall to your death because gravity affects you. It just doesn't affect the whole mountain that's sort of hanging up there in the air. And Harry Potter and all this junk, how can people watch such rubbish? There's no redeeming features to it. You shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free. Smash cultural Marxism. Look at the arrogant look in this woman's eyes behind her burqa. Look at this policewoman. I would not want to be a policeman or policewoman or police person or whatever they call themselves in Britain. Greenfield gives the example of refugees receiving thousands of dollars of benefits, living in air-conditioned quarters, being ungrateful and having a sense of entitlement. The worst attitude in the world is entitlement. He hasn't worked, paid for, thanked anyone for any of this, And why should he? He's entitled to it by virtue of his superiority as a Muslim, and our inferiority as infidels, kafirs. There's no sense of gratitude, only constant demands, as if the people who drove out their own Christians have some moral claim on the charity of Christians in the West. Remember, these are people who have slaughtered Christians in their societies, or celebrated it. Simple question. Would Islamic countries welcome millions of Christians? If Islam's supposed to be so peaceful, why is everyone afraid to offend them? If Christians are supposed to be so dangerous, why do people make it a point to always offend them? Have you noticed the same liberals who say that parents who spank their children are committing child abuse, but you've got to accept the cultural traditions of Islam, including cutting your child on the head with sharp knives? So, what on earth could we have a problem with Islam about? I mean, yeah, slavery, hanging, child beating, animal sacrifice, rape, forced belief, slave trade, stoning, child marriages, concubines. I mean, take your pick. Yes, I've got a few problems with Islam. That's why we wrote the book Slavery, Terrorism, Islam. And then they want to say that Islamic terrorists like the Islamic State have nothing to do with Islam. 96% of rapists in the United Kingdom are Muslims. It's disturbing. Same in Italy, same in Denmark, wherever you go. They might be a minority, but they're the majority of the criminals. And there was a time when the men of Europe would have responded differently to their women being raped by foreign invaders. But of course, I don't think Europe's got that many men right now. They might have some males, or transgenders, or whatever they are, or gender confused. But they don't have any men if they're not willing to deal with these creeps the way they should be. Take Nana. Her boyfriend, her, got beaten up by Somali youth in Denmark on Christmas Eve. If this is what they do when they are the minority, what do you think they're going to do when they're the majority? Well, just look at Egypt and Turkey. And then you've got this Nigerian Muslim who tried to behead a British soldier unarmed on the streets of England, and literally with the blood in his hands, exactly what Baden-Powell was warning about. In fact, I don't think he could have imagined how Enoch Powell, that it was even worse. What is happening in Syria is a religious civil war fought over the same ideologies as the ones practiced by the vast majority of refugees. This is an Islamic war, fought to determine which branch of Islam will be supreme, Shiite or Sunni or Sufi. It's not a war that started last week or last year, but 1,400 years ago. We cannot make it going away by overthrowing Assad, or giving out candy, or taking refugees, or giving them free Wi-Fi. This conflict is in the cultural DNA of Islam. There are Christian and non-Muslim refugees, minorities who are genuine refugees, but the two Muslim sects, whose militias are murdering each other, are not victims, they are the perpetrators. Just because Sunnis are running from a Shiite militia or Shiites are running from a Sunni militia right now doesn't make them victims. The moment their side's militia wins and begins slaughtering the other side, the oppressed will become the oppressors. This is actually a very important, true point. Such shifts have already taken place in countries countless times in this conflict, and the refugees are not fleeing a dictator. They're fleeing each other, while carrying the hateful ideologies that cause the bloodshed with them. Just take in Britain, you've got to have these warnings, and in America, to honor killing victims. Is your family threatening you? LeaveIslamSafely.com. I saw a documentary by the Bolshevik Broadcasting Corporation, BBC, on honor, the problem of honor killings in Britain. And they managed to have a 30-minute program without mentioning Islam, Quran, Muslim, Sharia law once. You'd get the impression that British people are, you know, British fathers are getting out there killing their daughters, and British brothers are killing their sisters. There's no British people murdering their own family members. This is Muslims doing it. And yet they're trying to make it out like there's this British problem. Never been here before, but it's an Islamic problem. We're not taking people fleeing the civil war, we're taking in the civil war. President Assad, has pointed out terrorism will not stop here. It'll export itself through illegal immigration to Europe. In fact, by bombing a pretty stable country and turning it into a war zone and dehousing millions of people, they've stimulated this tidal wave of chaos and all the immigration to Europe, not just from Syria, but also what they did to Egypt and what they did to Libya. All this destabilizing by America's sponsored Arab Spring under old Barack Hussein Obama and Hillary Clinton as Secretary of State. They've tried to destroy these countries. And how can you, as he said, America's killed hundreds of thousands of people and spent trillions of dollars in the war of terrorism. But they support terrorists in our country. While when it's done in their country, it's called terrorism. But when they do it here and what they sponsor here, suddenly it's called a civil war. Grand Mufti of Egypt, Muslims must kill non-believers wherever they are unless they convert. Remember, their children are being trained to kill your kids. How to take any prospering civilized Western country and turn to a dust bowl of poverty and death? Just add Islam. It'll destroy civilization. Do you really want this in your neighborhood? How can this not be child abuse? And Islam brings debasing of women, slavery, harems, literally putting women in cages. Burqas are primarily to hide the black eyes and broken noses of people being beaten up, which they know that there's laws against in the West. When I started doing Muslim evangelism in the 1970s, you never saw any Muslim woman wearing any veils anywhere in Cape Town. It's gotten popular more recently because we've got stricter and stricter laws against domestic violence, and this is primarily to cover domestic violence. I believe that's the primary purpose for the increase in burqas, is to hide the damage that they do to their women. In Pakistan, this girl is being buried up to waist to be stoned to death because she reported she is a victim of rape. But under Islam, a victim of rape is to be executed because women have the power of enticement, therefore they are 90% to blame for rape. This is according to these geniuses that they call imams and sheikhs, that the man might get a slap on the wrist. Naughty, don't do that again. Maybe. But the woman gets stoned to death in Pakistan, or shot in the head in Afghanistan, or hung in Iran. This is Sharia law. And yes, we've got these feminists in Europe and America who are insanely in love with Islam, not realizing that it's the death penalty. Or this poor woman who had her nose cut off by her husband, legally. 5,000 Muslim women have acid thrown in their face every year for not wearing a veil. So the real war on women is not being committed by Christianity, but by Islam. Forced child marriage, female infanticide, kidnapping, torture, rape, flogging, abductions, honor killings. That's why John Wesley said, ever since the religion of Islam appeared in the world, the espousals of it have been as wolves and tigers to all other nations, rending and tearing all that fell into merciless paws, grinding them with their iron teeth, that numberless cities are razed from the foundation, and only their name remaining, that many countries which were once as a garden of God are now a desolate wilderness, and that so many once numerous and powerful nations are vanished from the earth, like the Byzantine Empire. Such was and is, at this day, the rage, the fury, the revenge of these destroyers of humankind. Europe is in danger of falling to Islam. There's an urgent and serious need for new biblical reformation and a fresh spiritual revival. Only Christianity, and I mean true biblical Christianity, can defeat radical Islam. It's done it before, can do it again. But secular humanism and hedonism are no match for Islamic jihad. You can't beat an idea except with a more powerful one. By rejecting Christianity, Europe is committing spiritual suicide. By embracing secular humanism and welcoming Islamic immigration, Europe is committing cultural and economic suicide. By intermarrying with Muslims and building mosques and madrasas throughout the continent, Europe is betraying future generations to bondage. By rejecting God's law, Europe may soon fall under Islamic Sharia law. They want to complain about Christian moral standards. Now they're going to love the burqa. Ignorance of history is catastrophic. Those who forget the lessons of history are doomed to repeat its failures. Guilt manipulation and indoctrination have neutralized Europe. And that's why we need to rediscover our history, which is why we put a huge emphasis on history in the Reformation Society. Karl Marx said the first battlefield is a rewriting of history. And his disciples have been super busy distorting history. Alexander Solzhenitsyn of Russia said, when asked, how was it that communists, atheists took over a great Christian country like Russia? He said, we forgot God. Judges 2 verse 10 to 11 says, another generation grew up who knew neither the Lord nor what he had done. They provoked the Lord to anger. Hard times create strong men. Strong men create good times. Good times create weak men. Weak men create hard times. It's a cycle of history. Secularism, humanism, heathenism, and hedonism have gutted Europe, morally, spiritually, and ethically, making it vulnerable to an Islamic takeover. By aborting her babies, Europe is aborting her future. By secularizing her schools, Europe is condemning her youth. By paganizing her populations, Europe has perverted her society. By importing millions of Muslim migrants, Europe is committing demographic suicide. And we could say similar things about our own country, but we won't bother. They've only taken it from 2003 to 2017. If you took it from 1990, it would be a lot more radical. We have seen the same in the SAA, more and more and more employees, less and less service. We've got 8 times more employees per aircraft than Qantas. They are looting SAA. Used to make money for the country, now we've got to bail it out. It's like we've all donated blood at some stage, but I mean, they only mean take a pint from you at a time. You have, in fact, what do you have? You've got 8 pints of blood in your body. So when they want to take 6 pints out, you're like about to die. And so everything that the government's nationalized is bankrupt. But now they want to nationalize the bank. Yeah, now that's really going to help. So how should we as Christians respond? There are 2 extremes we've got to guard against. There are those negative people, those who refuse to see the crisis and they say there's no problem. And then there's those who panic and say there's no hope. Now, both these are wrong. No hope, no problem. That's both wrong. We must recognize the problems honestly and soberly. Man is depraved and in rebellion to God and his word. Sin inevitably reaps tremendous trouble. But we must recognize God is sovereign and he's almighty. There is power in prayer. The gospel is the power of God for the salvation of all who believe. How can any Christian say there's no hope? Judges 3 verse 1 to 2 has got God's strategy for complacency. These are the nations the Lord left to test those Israelites who had not experienced any of the wars in Canaan. He did this only to teach warfare to the descendants of the Israelites who had not had previous battle experience. They were left to test the Israelites to see if they would obey the Lord's commands. So we've got to regard these problems and challenges around us as challenges, tests. This is first and foremost a battle for the mind. And one of the weapons we've contributed to this battle is Slavery, Terrorism, Islam, the Historical Roots and Contemporary Threat book. And the Muslim Evangelism Workshop. They wouldn't be too keen to move into areas if we were thoroughly evangelizing them and they were losing a lot of their people to Christianity. But they're obviously not afraid of that. Because they're letting the people come into Christian areas because most Christians don't bother to try to evangelize their people. Then there's the Islam Rising DVD, which we helped to produce, which are basic minimum introductions to the threat confronting us. We must wake up to the urgent and serious crisis. Most churches are asleep or in apostasy. The world is rushing by on its way to hell. Our prayer meetings are sparsely attended and lacking in fire and fervor. Most evangelical churches engage in little or no evangelism. Missionary vision is weak, and much of what's done in the name of missions has little to do with fulfilling the Great Commission. We need to make disciples of all nations, teaching obedience to all things the Lord has commanded. We need to understand Islam, and we need to evangelize Muslims. God has not given us a spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of a sound mind. European men fought for over 1,000 years to keep Europe free of Muslims. Why now open their borders to them and pay for them to come and subvert their countries? If you worship your enemy, you're defeated. This is Leonidas of Sparta. If you adopt your enemy's religion, you're enslaved. If you breed with the enemy, you're destroyed. The Bible study door is not being crowded, but the healing miracle worship program, and you can see people don't want hard work. Reading is an act of resistance in a landscape of distraction. Old books help us discover the sensibilities once common to us all. I read old books because I would rather learn from those who built up civilization than those who are tearing it down. We live in an age where tradition is one of the highest forms of rebellion. Being straight, married, raising children in the love and the fear and admonition of the Lord. This used to be normal. Now this is bizarre. Today it's a spiritual battle to raise children in the love and the fear of the Lord. We're living in a hostile world that wants to destroy the next generation. And we have to engage in spiritual warfare to protect the next generation and give them the faith and the vision for the future. One day ISIS will run into the wrong Christians. people like Richard the Lionhearted. The day will come when we will fight back, like the Knights of Malta, like the Christians who won the Battle of Vienna, reminding us that on the 11th of September, 1683, the great cavalry charge that broke the Muslim high water mark at Vienna, they destroyed the Muslim army's colossal defeat, and to celebrate the victory, the bakers made a crescent-shaped croissant, they called it. In fact, the name croissant came from Marie Antoinette because she brought it from Vienna to Paris when she married the Dauphin of France, King Louis XVI. And so in the French, it's the croissant. And of course, a croissant should be in a crescent shape to remind us that we had the Muslims for breakfast. And so another thing that came out of the tents of the Muslims around Vienna is they found a Capuchin monk found coffee, lots of coffee, in the tents of the Muslims. And so he opened up a coffee shop that was called a cappuccino because Capuchin monks were serving it, and that's where cappuccinos come from. So cappuccinos and croissants are just two examples of Christian victory over Islam. We need to build a sense of resistance. In Switzerland, people did a referendum, stopped the building of mosques, no more mosques. And in Malta, they came up with a campaign and referendum on that. In Britain, there are people like Britain First fighting against the building of mosques in Britain. The Knights of Malta, who defeated the Muslims in 1565, no compromise, no surrender, no retreat. Europe must be won back to Christ. Europe needs a biblical reformation, a spiritual revival. Our mission's vision is Africa for Christ, but there also needs to be groups who will have the vision of Europe for Christ. Restore us, O God Almighty. Make your face shine upon us that we may be saved. It's either God's law or Sharia law. It's either Christianity or Islam. It's either Reformation or Islamization. Will you not revive us again that your people will rejoice in you? But thanks be to God who gives us the victory through our Lord Jesus Christ. Therefore, my dear brothers, stand firm. Let nothing move you. Always give yourself fully to the work of the Lord, because you know that your labor in the Lord is not in vain.